My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Growing up in the 1950s and early 60s, I had a friend whose mother always seemed to be sad. When in my innocence I would ask her what's wrong, she would say that she had the blues. She said that she would feel better in a while, but always seemed to be experiencing the blues. As I got older, I came to understand that she and many others suffered from depression. Today, according to the World Health Organization, an estimated 100 million people worldwide are suffering from depression, with antidepressant drugs as the most common treatment. More than one-sixth of Americans take a psychiatric medicine, usually an antidepressant. What if these medications only work partially or not at all? What other means are available to those suffering from chronic depression? Are there natural mindfulness techniques that may be used to deal effectively with depression? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Dr. Stuart Eisendrath, pioneered research into the therapeutic effects of mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, or MBCT, and developed an easy-to-implement program that has been scientifically proven in a National Institute of Health study to bring relief to chronic sufferers of depression by helping them realize that negative thoughts are not their reality. Dr. Eisendrath is the founding director of the University of California San Francisco Depression Center, a senior clinician and research psychiatrist at UCSF. His lectures on MBCT for University of California Television have been viewed by more than 1.5 million people. His website is stuarteisendrath.com. That's S-T-U-A-R-T. EISENDRATH.com. And he joins me this evening to discuss his new book, When Antidepressants Aren't Enough, Harness the Power of Mindfulness to Alleviate Depression. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Dr. Stuart Eisendrath. Good evening, sir.
Hi, thank you very much for that nice introduction.
And thank you for joining us. So please share with us your personal early path and how it led to your career in medicine and psychiatry.
Well, I was always interested in how the mind worked and what the effects of thinking and feelings were in terms of their impact on one's mood. And so when I went into medical school, I was interested in psychological processes. And I wasn't always completely sure I wanted to go into psychiatry. There were other things that were appealing as well. But in the end, I decided that psychiatry would be the most gratifying and rich field for me to go into. And that's what I pursued.
Now, do you have personal experience with depression, and how was this addressed?
Yes, I have had personal experience with depression at different points in my life, usually related to various stressors that were going on. And I used different forms of treatment at different times. For example, early in my career, when psychoanalysis was very popular, I did psychoanalysis and found that that was actually not that helpful. It was aimed at uncovering historical roots that caused depression. And for example, I had feelings of guilt that were prominent. And the psychoanalysis was focused on trying to understand the cause of that guilt. Had I committed some crime, or had I thought I committed some crime that was worthy of producing guilt? And as I learned more about depression and understood the kinds of thoughts that are common in depression, I realized that guilty thoughts are symptoms of depression. they're not the cause of it at all. And depression produces common symptoms like feeling unworthy or self-critical, and that those are symptoms of depression. Depression generates those kinds of thoughts, and in turn, those kinds of thoughts worsen the depression. So there had to be some kind of technique that would be useful in breaking up that cycle of depression and negative thoughts and feelings, and those in turn generating more depression.
What does medical science tell us about the genesis of depression? Is it genetic, environmental, or some of both?
It's probably some of both. There's definitely genetic components to it, in that people with certain chromosomal patterns actually have more or less propensity to experience depression, depending on the chromosomes and genes that are present or not present. So in some instances, people who have certain genes are more resilient and face less depression, and others who have a different set of genes are more susceptible to stress and experience more depression as a result.
So there is a balance, you think, between both genetic and environmental?
There's definitely a balance, because a stress can have plays a role in the impact on the individual and the individual's genetic makeup. So it's really both the stress that they experience and the genetic. So it's an environmental and genetic components to it.
Now, many of us have read or heard about electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT, and also transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS. What results have been achieved with these techniques? I know ECT goes back a long way, and to some it seems a little bit barbaric.
Well, actually, ECT goes back to the 1930s, when an Italian by the name of Cerletti first found that it was effective in producing relief from depression. And it remains one of the most efficacious means of reducing depression. It has certain side effects with it, in that sometimes people experience some mild memory loss. And of course, it has to be done usually in a hospital setting, although there's recent changes in trying to do it in an outpatient setting. But it requires general anesthetic briefly, and then the ECT is delivered. So it's a little more complicated than other forms of outpatient treatment. Transcranial magnetic stimulation is a newer type of intervention that applies magnetic stimuli to certain areas of the brain, and it can be effective in relieving depression in about a third of people who undergo it. So a third of the people who undergo it will experience remission of their depressive symptoms. So those are both interventionists in psychiatry, TMS or ECT, as they're called usually. They can be very effective, but they have certain costs associated with them. For example, TMS requires 4 to 6 weeks of five times a week daily treatment. So it can be expensive, and it can also take a period of time to get the results. And there's still research being done on how long those results last, or whether people need to have a continuous refresher course of having it. And so it has just very few side effects, but it has certain costs associated with it.
And what's the efficacy of the ECT?
ECT is probably more in the range of 70 to 80% effective. So it's probably the most effective treatment that is available for depression. But of course, as I mentioned, it has anesthetic associated with it, and it has potential memory loss that is usually quite mild, and usually for memories during the period that the person is getting the ECT. It doesn't usually affect other memory.
And you're saying that's a 70% remission rate?
Yes.
And that's long-term remission, no recurrence?
Oh, no, that raises a good point. Depression is a recurring illness. So people who get ECT usually have to get refreshers of ECT, either the full course of treatment, or some find that they can get one treatment on a periodic basis and maintain remission over that period of time. But this is a very important point. Depression is a recurrent illness. That's why depression accounts for the most disability in the world today. More than coronary artery disease or cancer, depression is the most disabling illness there is. And the reason for that is because it usually starts early in life, usually in the teens or 20s, and then it recurs over a lifetime at a fairly significant rate. If you have one episode of depression, within the next 10 years, you have a 90% chance of having a recurrence. If you've had two episodes of depression, you have a 90% chance of having another episode within 3 years. So depression is a recurrent illness, and you have to, if you suffer from depression, you have to realize that and develop skills and interventions that can help prevent future relapses. And this is different than what we used to think about depression as being like pneumonia. If you have pneumonia, you get some antibiotic, and then you're done with pneumonia and you don't have any further episodes. You have to have ongoing relapse prevention strategies, and that's how mindfulness-based cognitive therapy was first developed.
My guest is Dr. Stuart Eisendrath. He's the author of the new book, When Antidepressants Aren't Enough, Harnessing the Power of Mindfulness to Alleviate Depression. And we'll be back with Dr. Eisendrath after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Tune in to The Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World, with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill, and just past that vintage denim jacket you spot, miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings, and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Dr. Stuart Eisendrath. He's the author of When Antidepressants Aren't Enough, Harnessing the Power of Mindfulness to Alleviate Depression. Stuart, what is the difference between someone who occasionally feels depressed and chronic depression?
The individual who has intermittent depression usually has periods where they're functioning normally and they're free of depression during that period of time. And then they have a recurrence or a relapse. And the person who has chronic depression remains significantly depressed, and it may range in severity, but having persistent symptoms of depression over a prolonged period of time. Usually we think of it as being for 2 years or longer.
So in other words, we all feel some form of sadness or depression during various times in our life, the loss of a loved one or some type of event, a catastrophic event, an illness or something of that nature. But that person experiences that for whatever the appropriate period of time is, and then it doesn't recur. Whereas with chronic depression, you'll say this will recur again.
Well, that's in general correct, but I would say one thing that's important to understand, sadness is part of the normal human experience. Depression is a little bit different. It's sadness plus other symptoms. So when somebody loses a loved one, sadness and grief are normal. Depression is a little bit different, and the one way of differentiating it is this. If you ask the person who is grieving the loss of a loved one, how do they feel about themselves as a person, the individual will say, I feel okay, I feel fine about myself as a person. I'm sad because I had the loss, but I feel okay about myself. If you ask the depressed person how they feel about themselves, it's usually with self-criticism. I feel this way because I'm a bad person, or because I did such and such, or because I'm unworthy. And they take the blame for it on as part of themselves. So sadness and depression are not exactly the same.
And what are the physical ramifications of depression, chronic depression?
The physical ramifications are certain symptoms such as an appetite change. It may be increased or decreased. Classically, it's a decrease with weight loss, but it can be weight gain. There's a sleep disturbance. Again, it might be increased sleep or decreased sleep. In the classic melancholia type of depression, there's early morning awakening as the most common symptom. And then there may be psychomotor agitation or slowing. So the person may be agitated, pacing, or they may be slowed down so they're hardly moving at all. So those are some of the common characteristics of depression. And then there are physical manifestations that can occur in terms of difficulties with constipation or other aspects of their daily functioning.
What role does childhood trauma play in chronic depression?
Well, childhood trauma is, as we're learning more and more, is very important in making a person vulnerable to stress and stressors in later life. So it is definitely a factor in setting a person up to experience depressive episodes. So childhood trauma is a major risk factor.
And what intervention can be done?
Well, the person can learn certain techniques, and that's really one of the things that we've researched is mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. They can learn skills that they can empower themselves with so that they aren't so vulnerable to a downward spiral in thoughts and mood when a stress occurs. That's how mindfulness-based cognitive therapy was first developed, as a relapse prevention strategy, a depression prevention strategy. Well, in early studies of mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, or MBCT, people who had experienced depression but had recovered were divided into two groups. And those two groups, one received MBCT and the other didn't. And it was found in the people after 1 year who had received MBCT were twice as likely as the other group to be free of depression over that year. So it prevented relapse in that population. There was another significant study that was very powerful because it was similar to that study, but these were people who were on antidepressants. And it took people who had recovered from antidepressants and again divided them into two groups. One received mindfulness-based cognitive therapy and then were tapered off of antidepressants, and the other continued to receive antidepressants for a full two-year follow-up period. And it was found that the mindfulness-based cognitive therapy without antidepressant was just as effective as maintenance antidepressants without all the side effects and costs of antidepressants being involved. So mindfulness-based cognitive therapy is a very powerful tool in preventing relapse.
Now, your study of this, I believe, started 17 years ago?
That's correct.
And what interested you in pursuing this?
Well, what started the idea of doing this is that was the evidence for people who had received antidepressants. Antidepressants are the most common form of treatment around the world for depression. They're easy to give. Primary care physicians prescribe the bulk of them. And for a primary care physician who isn't, who is familiar with psychotherapy and doesn't have much time, an antidepressant is an easy thing to do and can be effective in people. But in the largest study of this approach, people who were given antidepressants, a full dose of antidepressants after 12 weeks, had a 30% chance of recovering. Then they were given a second 12-week course, and a total then of 50% of people had recovered. But this means after two full treatments, 50% had not recovered. So we wanted to develop a strategy for those people that would help them get to full recovery.
Now, you say in your book's introduction that you aim to help readers change their relationship to depression. How so?
Well, most people who are depressed, in several ways, suffer from self-critical thoughts. When they have a relapse, they blame themselves. They think of themselves as being, and others may share that belief with a certain stigma of being depressed, that they're at fault for having an episode of depression, rather than as seeing it as, you know, it's just like somebody who has diabetes or asthma. If a person has asthma and they have a relapse down the road, they don't have to be critical of themselves. They have a chronic recurring illness. And similarly, people who have depression can learn that, okay, here's another episode. What can I do about it without being critical of myself? So changing the relationship to seeing it as something that is an illness, but something you can do something with and treat, and in various ways, whether it's ECT, TMS, or mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. And mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, of course, is one that is self-empowering, because it teaches people skills they can do on their own.
How do you define mindfulness?
Mindfulness basically is being aware of what you're experiencing in the present moment. So being aware of what you're experiencing as you are experiencing it, and then suspending judgment about that experience. So it is basically focusing your attention on what you're experiencing. For example, if you're focusing on your breath, you're noticing the sensations in your airways and your chest as you're breathing in and as you're breathing out. What does it feel like at the nostrils as you breathe in and out? So you're paying attention, in other words, shining a spotlight on some particular thing, so that you're becoming more aware of what exactly is going on as you experience it.
So the foundation of mindfulness seems like it comes from meditation techniques in Buddhism.
Yes, it does. These techniques go back 2,500 years, but mindfulness-based cognitive therapy and mindfulness-based stress reduction, which is a cousin of mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, really don't use Buddhist terms and have made it useful for anybody. You don't have to be a Buddhist to be using these techniques.
My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Dr. Stuart Eisendrath, is the author of the new book, When Antidepressants Aren't Enough, Harnessing the Power of Mindfulness to Alleviate Depression. Stuart, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and this amazing work.
They can get the book at Amazon, and it's available in paperback, Kindle, or Audible forms. And it's also available at Barnes & Noble and Indie Books.
And your website.
If you go to my website at www.stuarteisendrath.com, it has the links for all of those.
And what about those who'd like to view these presentations that you've been doing at the University of California?
They can get those. If you go to my website, it actually has a briefer version of what's on the University of California website. But if they want to see the full version, they can go to www.uctv.edu and search under my name for the lectures at that site.
And we'll be back with more of Dr. Eisendrath and When Antidepressants Aren't Enough after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going OM? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone?
Do flowers have best friends?
I don't know.
Hey, look.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Dr. Stuart Eisendrath, is the author of When Antidepressants Aren't Enough, Harnessing the Power of Mindfulness to Alleviate Depression. What is mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, MBCT, and how does it differ from other CBT models?
Well, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy is a blend of some CBT concepts and mindfulness meditation. And in it, the emphasis is on mindfulness meditation, learning to become mindful. So, for example, in traditional cognitive behavior therapy, the person, if they have a negative thought, they try to answer back to that thought. For example, if they have a thought that's common in depression, like, I'm a bad person or I'm a weak person, then they try to answer back and well, maybe I'm not such a bad person because I helped an old lady cross the street or some other reason. So come up with a reason why they might not be such a bad person and basically answer back to a thought. In mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, we actually emphasize changing the relationships to thoughts and feelings. For example, if the person says, I'm a bad person, well, actually, what they're really doing is saying, I have the thought I'm a bad person. And then once you recognize it's a thought, you can choose to relate to it differently. So if you're meditating, for example, if you're focusing on your breath, it's just one example, and your mind wanders, as minds tend to do, you gently let go of where your mind has wandered to. Maybe it wanders to, what am I going to have for dinner tonight? Or what am I going to do tomorrow during my day? Or someplace else. You notice your mind has wandered, and that's the mindfulness approach. And then you gently bring it back to the object of attention, in this case, the breath. So you learn how to refocus your attention. And the same thing applies to negative thoughts. For example, if I have the thought I'm a bad person, my mind wandered to that, but I learn I can let go of that thought and bring the attention back to my breath. And one fellow in one of our groups really captured this very perfectly. He said, if I can forgive myself for my mind wandering for minor things, maybe I can forgive it for more major things and be more forgiving of myself in general. So he was really learning how he could let go of negative thoughts and feelings and bring the attention back to where he wanted to focus it.
Please give our listeners another example of this technique.
Well, another example would be when you're having as is common in depression, a ruminative thought. Rumination is endless loops of thinking about something that's happened in the past without coming up with any solution. It's not problem solving, because problem solving leads to a solution and some action. Rumination is just going over and over something and suffering as a consequence and really driving depression. So in mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, you're paying attention to your thinking. So you can notice, I'm ruminating. And then once you notice you're ruminating, there's actually something you can do about it. You don't have to stay stuck in that ruminative cycle. You can bring yourself back to your meditation, say your breath again in this example, or to body sensations as another example. You can let go of the rumination and bring your attention back to the object of attention. And in this way, it helps decrease rumination and decrease that main driver of depression.
What is the science behind MBCT?
Well, the science is twofold. The clinical experience with MBCT has been clear-cut that it can prevent relapse and it can treat residual depression after antidepressants, as I've described a bit earlier. But in addition, in our study of about 180 people with depression who had not responded to two or more antidepressants, we took 80 of those people and did functional MRIs. Functional MRIs are MRIs that look at blood flow in the brain from second to second. So it shows you which parts of the brain are active and getting more blood flow. And we took people who received MBCT and compared them to people who didn't receive MBCT. And in the people who received MBCT, there was a definite change in the pattern of their functional MRIs after 8 weeks of an MBCT class. This meant the areas of the brain that were involved with depression, for example, the amygdala, which is very active in depression and sends alarms out to the other parts of the brain, and the frontal areas of the brain, like the dorsal lateral prefrontal cortex, that's an area of the brain that's involved with thinking and regulating emotion, were normalized. In depression, the amygdala is hyperactive and the frontal areas are hypoactive, and these patterns were reversed after 8 weeks and normalized, so where the prefrontal cortex was restored to normal and the amygdala was toned down. So this technique is not something that is like smoke and mirrors. It actually changes the way the brain functions, and we can measure those changes and document them with functional MRI.
What is the long-term outcome from someone who practices this?
Well, the long-term outcome is that people have much less chance of having a relapse or a recurrence. It isn't reduced to zero, of course, but the chance of it compared to people who don't receive the treatment at all is much better, at least double. And for those who are on antidepressants, it's at least equal to the rates of relapse for those individuals. So it is very effective as a treatment technique. And of course, the person gains from learning the technique for themselves. So it's something that they can take with them wherever they go. We have people who take the class or learn the technique, and they can do a meditation. The meditation may be 3 minutes. And they can do this technique sitting on a bus or traveling somewhere or waiting for their flight at the airport. They can do it wherever they are. So it's a technique that provides them with a toolkit that they can use. And many of the meditations are available for free on my website under the audio section, and they can either be downloaded or streamed from the website, and people can test them out and find ones that fit best for them.
Can MBCT be considered a therapeutic model unto itself?
Yes, it can. It builds, of course, on various other techniques. As you mentioned, it builds on 2,500 years of Buddhist meditation. It builds on some cognitive behavior therapy models. And in that sense, it blends a number of different models together into one technique that can be very powerful and useful to a wide variety of people. You don't have to be anything special in order to learn these meditative techniques. If you can breathe, you can learn these techniques. And you don't have to sit for 45 minutes in one position. You can learn a technique like a 3-minute breathing space that you can take with you wherever you go.
And what's actually happening inside when we're doing this? What are the changes that are taking place?
Well, a primary change is that the person is learning to be present and paying attention in the present moment. This has powerful effects because in depression, a person tends to feel as if they've experienced a loss of some type, and they feel that loss. A person who has anxiety tends to feel that there's going to be a loss occurring in the future. So mindfulness meditation, with its focus on the present moment, tends to help the person to stop thinking about the past and stop thinking about the future and just focus on the present moment. So there's less bandwidth, as it were, to be focused on the past or the future. They're just focused on the present moment. What's happening right now? And that may be focusing on the breath, or it may be focusing on some other thing, chopping vegetables in preparation for dinner, but it's focusing your attention. That's the main thing that happens. learning how to focus your attention.
And can this be engaged with any type of physical activity also?
Yes, it can. You can, for example, while you're walking down the street, you can be paying attention to the sensations you're experiencing in your feet, in your legs. What's going on there? If you really start doing this, you may often be amazed at the different sensations that are taking place that normally we don't pay attention to.
So we're actually given the ability to tune in to what's happening physically with us.
Exactly.
My guest this week is Dr. Stuart Eisendrath. He's the author of When Antidepressants Aren't Enough, Harnessing the Power of Mindfulness to Alleviate Depression. We'll be back with more of Dr. Eisendrath after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
The following is made possible by Dad.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling all over it.
The Dad Joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
Why do you have to be careful when it's raining cats and dogs? Because you might step in a poodle.
And kids that spend more time with their dads grow up to be smarter, more successful.
Can I tell you a cat joke? Just kidding.
And with any luck, funnier adults.
Why didn't the skeleton go to the dance? Because he didn't have any body to go with.
Dad jokes rule. So take a moment to make a moment and give your kid a laugh. It's as easy as going to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
That's really funny.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
Looking for inspiration?
Want to be inspired?
Not sure where to go?
Find Mark and Kim every Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Inspired Living.
Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual.
Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Dr. Stuart Eisendrath. He's the author of When Antidepressants Aren't Enough, Harnessing the Power of Mindfulness to Alleviate Depression. Stuart, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, I was inspired to write this book because depression tends to be such a persistent illness that, as you mentioned earlier, only 50% of people after two antidepressant trials are free of depression. And if you give them four antidepressant trials over the course of a year, it ends up with only 45%, because some of the people will have relapsed along the way. So depression tends to be persistent. people have to recognize that it is and not be critical of themselves for experiencing it. And we wanted to develop a technique that people could take with them, that they could use as a way of dealing with depression on their own. And we wanted to diminish the suffering of so many people around the world that this was a technique we felt could help break the cycle of depression, depressive thoughts, and downward spiral of depression.
Now, your book is an 8-week course. What can readers expect to experience during that 8-week period?
Well, learning mindfulness meditation is kind of like learning other skills, like learning how to play the piano, for example. You start out slowly and with more simple techniques, and over time you become more proficient with it. And so you may start off with briefer meditations and over time try some longer meditations. And usually after several weeks, people are starting to really get the rhythm of the technique. And at the midpoint, most people are getting the concepts we're trying to deliver. And then by 8 weeks, there's a significant decrease in depression, decrease in anxiety, decrease in rumination, and increase in self-compassion. And we've measured all those characteristics in our research and found those findings to be true. So people can make very significant changes in their life over a course of 8 weeks.
In addition to the MBCT practice, are there other things that you suggest that people do? For example, physical activities?
Well, physical activity is a very useful technique. Exercise itself can be a powerful antidepressant. And while that's not essentially a part of MBCT, we highly recommend that people do physical activities, and that can be very useful as an adjunct.
What about changes in diet?
Well, changes in diet are something that we pay attention to in the form of mindfulness. That is, most of us eat when we're doing something else. We're watching TV, we're talking with somebody else, reading the newspaper. So we're not paying attention to what we're eating. The mindfulness approach is, if you're eating, pay attention to that. Don't have the TV on, don't be reading, but taste what you're eating. For example, try eating a raisin mindfully. You'll be amazed if you do that. Put the raisin up to your nose, you actually can smell the aromas, and your mouth begins to water. If you put it in your mouth, you can feel the different nooks and crannies of the raisin. If you bite it, you'll feel the juices start to flow, and you can actually notice that the sensations are different in different parts of your mouth because the taste buds are different in different parts of your mouth. I was about 57 years old before I really first tasted a raisin.
Mm.
Did so mindfully. Because normally what you do is pop them in and you're grabbing the next handful before you've even swallowed the first handful.
Mm, absolutely. What can people who fail to fully recover from depression with antidepressants do?
Well, there's a wide variety, and it's increasing these days. There's things like ECT, transcranial magnetic stimulation, additional psychotherapy, if they haven't had that already. Ketamine is a new drug that's being developed for use for treatment-resistant depression. And there's mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. It's a very useful technique for people who haven't fully recovered. And it differs from those other ones in that the person learns a technique that they can apply themselves.
I have people that I know personally and will try to convince them to start some type of a meditation or mindfulness practice, and they say, I can't meditate. I can't do that. What do you say to somebody who says, I can't do that?
I say if you can't breathe, if you can breathe, you can meditate. And when they say they can't breathe, I mean, that's often a symptom of the depression, that they don't think they can do something. Focusing your attention is actually very easy in one sense. You can learn to focus your attention. The trouble is people tend to notice when they're doing that that their mind wanders and they're critical of themselves. Most people have the misconception that mindfulness, that meditation means you empty your mind of all thoughts or you don't have your mind wandering. Those are erroneous beliefs. Focusing your attention, even in the most experienced meditator, they're going to have their mind wandering. That's what our minds do. So accepting that and not being critical of yourself allows you to focus your meditation, and when your mind wanders, you gently escort it back. Kind of like if you have a puppy on a leash, the puppy's going to wander. And if you tug at it hard, it may be painful for the puppy. If you gently bring it back, the puppy will come back to your side.
I've also had people tell me, I don't have time to meditate. Does it require a huge time commitment?
There's no specific amount of time that has been studied as being a certain dose that a person has to get. Some people will say a certain amount, but there's really very little evidence that, 30 minutes or 20 minutes or 10 minutes are useful. There's one study that's come out recently suggesting that 10 minutes a day may be enough. And the meditations that are on my website range from 3 minutes to approximately 10 minutes. So the most important thing with meditation is developing some regularity of practice rather than a certain amount of time. It doesn't have to be time consuming. As I said before, you can be mindful even as you're walking, so it doesn't add anything to your day. Just paying attention to the sensations in your feet and legs is mindfulness enough.
And the continuation of a daily practice will lead to a facilitation of virtually getting into that state in a matter of seconds.
That's right. As you become more skillful in being able to meditate, it becomes easier to get into that state.
Now, what advice would you offer someone who is interested in starting a mindfulness practice with the intention of healing from depression?
Well, I would recommend that they either take a class in mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, and they can find classes in their area by Googling that, or they take the course as outlined in my book, so that has meditations along with it on the website that they can download or stream and practice the techniques that are explained in the book. Either one of them are useful approaches and equally satisfactory.
And what do you hope that readers will take away from your book?
I hope that readers will learn that depression is a recurrent illness, that it produces a great deal of suffering, and if a person is experiencing it, they can get better. People with depression tend to feel hopeless and helpless. And both of those are symptoms of the depression. Those are not really facts. Those are thoughts and not facts. And we hope that people will learn to start differentiating thoughts from facts. And as they do so, they can change their approach to living and their life.
And what's next for Dr. Stuart Eisendrath?
Well, what's next is really... I'm working on another book that deals with how people with depression may avoid things in their life and how avoidance can lead to further depression and what are the techniques that people can utilize to alter that avoidance.
Just give us a little tease on that. Tell us a little more.
Well, if people have a... fear of a certain situation, whatever it might be, a simple phobia or another kind of situation. But let's say they have a phobia where they're afraid of bridges. It could be insects. It could be giving blood or whatever the case may be. Or if public speaking is one of the most common ones. So if a person has a fear of that and they avoid it, they never learn that it's actually nothing they have to fear. So avoidance is a very powerful factor in driving their persistent anxiety and depression that may occur as a result of that avoidance. So if they approach that phobic object, if they learn to approach it gently and in a mindful way, they can learn that actually there's nothing to be feared about it. They can learn to say, okay, I'll try public speaking. They may try Toastmasters, for example, but learn that the thing they're most afraid of is something they don't have to fear. There's a saying, approach that fear and watch it disappear.
Yep. And I say, own your fears and they'll never own you. My guest, Dr. Stuart Eisendrath, he's the author of When Antidepressants Aren't Enough, Harnessing the Power of Mindfulness to Alleviate Depression. Stuart, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get your book and find out more about you and this amazing work.
My website is www.stuarteisendrath.com, and you can buy my book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Indie Books. It's available in several different formats, audio, on Audible, Kindle, and paperback forms.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.